So I think it was 2019, 20. We bought a little rundown cottage in Brookings, and we met our neighbors, Tyler and Casey, great couple. He had been in the Coast Guard for 10 years at that time, had been stationed up in Washington, now was in Brookings, just great guy. And I happened to meet him on Labor Day weekend, the Monday of Labor Day weekend, and he had been stationed up in Gold Beach at the mouth of the Rogue River where it meets the ocean. And I said, man, that must be crazy. And he goes, yeah, it was, especially this weekend. I said, what happened? He said, well, there was a big surf, so we had a small craft advisory. Any boats under 30 feet were not allowed to go over the bar. We thought it would lay down maybe by 11 or 12, and then we could let small crafts go. He said, this guy puts in a brand new boat, like this 24-foot, 500-horsepower aluminum boat, and he's motoring out. So Tyler radioed him, got him on the radio, and was like, hey, there's a small craft advisory. Your boat's not big enough. You can't go over the bar. And the guy told him, I'm going anyways, but in much more colorful language. So he just kept going. So Tyler's keeping an eye on it. 6 hours later, the guy comes back in. So Tyler and another Coast Guard meet him at the dock. He pulls in. And Tyler said, all I wanted to do was warn him, like, hey, this is dangerous. And if we have to go rescue you, it's really expensive. And it's unnecessary, and we might be divided then. There might be a real emergency that was not caused by ignorance, that was just caused because of the stuff that's happening, and we're gonna be distracted from actually doing our job. So he goes down there to talk to him. The guy was just arrogant. He's like, I made it, didn't I? What's the big deal? And Tyler tried to say, well, you know, if we have to rescue us here, but you didn't have to rescue me. So Tyler just said, finally says, that's it. I'm writing you a citation. Guy, probably pretty wealthy, was like, big whoop, man, I'll pay it right now. How much is it for? Tyler said, it will be for $10,000. That got his attention. So he goes, I want to talk to your commanding officer. And Tyler said, hold on a second. Oh, it's me. I am right now the ranking officer up here. He's 28 years old. I am the ranking officer at this place right now. Changed his tune. Still gave him the $10,000 citation, though. I said, is he gonna go like to a judge and get out of it? Not with the Coast Guard. It's not like a speeding ticket. He'll be paying that amount. Woo! So Tyler, just a great guy. We get to know him. But during that time, there was a shift in the federal government. And what started to trickle down from that was Tyler was having to take these classes and these trainings that Tyler felt like went against his conscience and his faith. And we'd have talks about that. And he had this struggle. And he wasn't sure what to do. And then one day he goes, I've decided what to do. I said, what? He said, I went and talked to my grandpa a couple of months ago. And I shared with my grandpa this. I said, man, I'm gonna retire in another 10 years when I've got 20 years in. I've got all these benefits. You know, it's good pay, but there's this side. And he said, my grandpa just listened and listened. And then he said, my grandpa looked at me and he said this to me. He said, Tyler, you are comfortably miserable. And Tyler said, for a month, I could not get that phrase out of my head. I'd be working, I'm thinking, that's exactly it. I'm comfortably miserable. So he put in his resignation, sold everything, moved to Texas to start a trailer rental business and a tool rental business. And that's where they live today. And I say that because work is complicated. Sometimes we're at jobs that are comfortably miserable. And we wonder, how long do we do this? What are we supposed to do? Lots of mixed emotions. For some of us, work is a four-letter word. And we wonder, why do we give ourselves to this? And this is nothing new. This is not American culture. This has been happening for a long, long, long time. In fact, we have this document. It's 3,500 years old. It's from ancient Sumerian culture that worshiped Marduk. And Marduk gives the reason why humans were created, because he was tired of working. Let me read it for you. This is from the Enumi Elis. Quote, talking about work. This is very hard. I will bring into being a lowly, primitive creature we'll call man. To him shall be charged all the labor so that the gods may have rest. Now, this is nothing new. By the way, it is that document and that understanding that led to slavery. So it was the kings and the pharaohs were all descendants of the gods. So guess what that meant they did not have to do? Work. You primitive people, you become my slaves because I am part of the God class and you are there to serve and to be my slaves. It really matters what you believe. It starts to affect culture. And that's actually the way that those cultures would say slavery is okay. So what does the Bible have to say about work? It's also a little bit like, comfortably miserable. There's the look out for the sluggard, look out for the fool, look out for this, look out for bad work. Read the book of Proverbs. On the other side, it's though, hey, if you use your gift well, you'll be brought before kings. Hey, be diligent, be faithful. So the Bible presents work, I call it like a blurse. You know what a blurse is? A blessing plus a curse is a blurse. It's both of those things. And in Ecclesiastes, you're gonna see Solomon goes back to work over and over and over again. So if you were here 2 weeks ago, we looked at Solomon's work and he accomplishes things that are way out of our league. Does all this work, and at the end of chapter 2, what Solomon does is he reflects back on his work, processes it, tries to figure out, okay, I've got this grand experiment. I'm gonna try all this stuff and then I'm gonna sit and I'm gonna say, okay, how did that work? How is that working for me? So that's where we're at right now. All right, let's process work. So here, jumping in, Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 18. I hated all my toil. Everything that I just did that 2 weeks ago, all that, his accomplishments, what he bought, how he lived, what he built, I hated it. I hate all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool, yet he will be master of all for which I've toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity. Solomon just says work is bad economics. I'm working my tail off, I'm doing all this stuff, and what's gonna happen is I'm gonna give it all to somebody else. Somebody else is gonna enjoy all the fruits of my labor. Any employees ever feel that way? You work your tail off, you do all this work, and all of your effort and all of your work goes to the man, the owner, helps them. Business owners, you ever feel this way? You work and you toil, you put your life into something. You gotta do extra work, you gotta bid jobs when no one else is bidding jobs. You're doing it at night, you're doing it on the weekends, you're doing it when everyone else is enjoying their evening, you're not. You're gonna have to fill out paperwork. There's extra time in it, and do you get 100% back? No way. There's taxes and fees and licenses and taxes and fees and licenses and taxes and workman's comp. And then you put all this money into an employee and you train them up, get them as good as possible, and then they start their own business and steal your best clients. They're pirates. The mistakes that your employees make, you're the one that has to eat that. They don't. If they make a mistake, it comes back to you. If they're really bad, you can be in chapter 11 bankruptcy. It's a lot of risk for not too much pie. And Solomon had a right to worry about his son, who he left his inheritance to. Because on day one, his foolish son lost 80% of the entire kingdom that Solomon had built in one day. So he had a right to worry, like, And this is coming for all of us. Myron and my son, he's 12. We went to this estate sale a couple of weeks ago. A guy had passed away, and we're just walking through. I'm walking through this guy's garage. He's got the pegboard. He's got everything neat. He's got bins of the right screws and bolts and nuts and all this kind of stuff. And I know what tools go for. Everything was at 10 cents on the dollar. all of his hard work now, all of his meticulous putting things on pegboards, like 3/4 inch box end wrench, like had it written out there, all of that now, 10 cents on the dollar. It's coming for every one of us. All of our hard work one day will die. All of my hard work will be out on the front lawn for a yard sale. And some guy, unemployed bum, will buy my Lazy Boy and my TV and sit back and watch it while collecting a government check. Bad economics. That's what Solomon's saying right here. So he gets depressed. Verse 20. So I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all my toil of the labors under the sun. I'm depressed. Does Monday make you depressed? You need a triple shot of Dutch Bros, not the other one. You're just like, the weight of this is, I'm burnt out. Because sometimes, verse 21, a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. This is also vanity and a great evil. What has a man from all the toil and striving of heart with which he toils under the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow, and his work is a vexation. Even in the night, his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. Sorrowful. Work ever make you sad? Just feel beat down by either the system that you're trying to work in that keeps changing like a moving target? Just mentally, physically, emotionally just beat you down? Is it vexation to your soul? It's just vexing. You get an end of year evaluation and you're like, I gave 2,000 hours of my life and this is how they think of me? Ever fail? No one bats 1,000. Work can be full of failure. Miss your goal behind. The specifications aren't met. The coffee was too sweet. Customers yell at you. You get humiliated by your boss. Coworkers give you side glances. It can be frustrating. You can try to change something. Like, I know if we would change this, we'd do so much better, but nobody wants to change that thing. It just keeps on just, You got an opinion on things, but no one values you enough to even ask your opinion. It vexes your soul. And then lastly, he says it robs you of rest. The stress, the worry, the anxiety, keeps you up. You wonder if you're getting too old for the job. You wonder if now you're just gonna be outsourced to AI. Like maybe my job's just gonna be gone. AI will do it. You remember something you said that was just stupid and it wakes you up at 1:17 a.m. and you're rehearsing in your mind, why did I say that? That's so stupid. And you can't get back to bed. That work robs you of the most important thing of life, rest. This is what Solomon says. That work is painful. Would you agree? Anyone in here ever find work to be sad, vexing, or painful? Right? What other activity in life would you give 2,000 hours a year for 50 years to if it caused you pain and vexation and sorrow? What else would you do? If your house was painful and stressful and vexing, what would you do? You'd sell it and move somewhere else. Like, I'm not dealing with that. If your roommates were painful and stressful and vexing, what would you do? I'm out, man. I'm not living here anymore. I'm not giving 2,000 hours a year, 50 years to that. Not worth it. If your hobby was painful or stressful or vexing, you'd be like, I'm not doing the hobby anymore. If your marriage was painful and stressful and vexing, what would you do? If parenting was painful, parenting is painful, stressful, and vexing, but there's nothing you can do. You're in it. Work, I think in the United States, even worse. I think it's worse than in Solomon's day. Here's why. Work is no longer just providing a means to an end or putting food on the table or it's a way to raise a family. That's not work anymore. Work is almost a religion. It becomes our identity. We get our community from it. We get a reputation from it. Men, when you meet someone for the first time and you're having a conversation, what do you always ask that other man? So, bro, what do you do? Do you judge them based on their answer? I'm a digital creator. Oh, you watch YouTube all day. Okay, that's fine. And it's a shift. 100 years ago, you got a job. 40 years ago, you got a calling. I mean, 40 years ago, you got a career. Today, work can't be a job or a career. It has to be a calling. I don't feel called to that. Okay. So work now has to take the weight of meaning and purpose and identity and value and standing in the community. So dedicate 20 years of your life to getting educated so you can begin to work a quarter of your life. Whoa, that's where we're at today. And I think in America, there's this humble brag. When someone asks you, man, how you doing? Bro, I am tired. I am busy. I remember a guy I had not seen for a while. This happened many years ago. And I saw him across the road. I was like, hey, man. And he looked at me and he just did this. He pointed at his watch and shook his head. Bro, no time, man. Can't even talk to you. I'm like, okay, see you later. Nice. All right. Because it's this, hey, I'm too tired, I'm busy. Slammed, man. So can work carry all that weight? That's the question. That's what Solomon is trying to figure out. This entire book is dedicated to the great experiment, trying to find meaning and purpose and identity and standing and reputation. And he looked at it and work, can it handle it all? Well, Solomon's like, I got depressed from it. I hated it. Well, maybe he just had the wrong job. Maybe I had the wrong job. If I had the right job, it could carry meaning and purpose and value and standing and reputation. If I just had the right job, that's always gonna be a carrot that's dangled out there. So let me give you a test on that. Anyone here, men, ever dream of becoming an NFL quarterback, starting an NFL quarterback? Anyone? My dream growing up, Joe Montana. I love Joe Montana. I wanted to be a starting NFL quarterback like Joe Montana. My dream. Anybody here ever hear of an NFL starting quarterback named Tom Brady? You ever heard of him? Okay. Listen to this interview with Tom Brady. I'll read it for you. Tom Brady. Why do I have Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me? I mean, maybe a lot of people would say, hey man, this is what is. I reached my goal, my dream, my life. Me, I think, it's got to be more than this. I mean, this can't be what it's all cracked up to be. Interviewer, what's the answer? Brady, I wish I knew. I wish I knew. There's a man, maybe the GOAT, arguably the greatest NFL quarterback in history. 7 Super Bowl rings. What does he say? Now, this can't be all. Top of his field. This is what Solomon is saying. There's a guy named Greg Easterbrook who wrote a book called The Progress Paradox. The subtitle is, when life gets better, we feel worse. It's hedonic adaption. Your appetite just grows. Tom Brady's appetite just grew and grew and grew. Now it's so enormous. Listen, there's nothing left for him. He's like Alexander the Great, weeping that there's no more countries in the world to conquer. That's what happens. He's like, we all know it. As a kid, I remember dreaming as a kid, man, if I had a bicycle, I could get to my friend's house so much faster. Instead of walking, I could go 10 miles per hour and I got a bicycle. Now we got electrical bicycles that go even faster. And then remember, I cannot wait till I have a car. Can you imagine going 65 miles per hour? That would be amazing if I could only go 65 miles per hour. And I remember as a 12-year-old, I told people, I'll never speed. 65 miles per hour is fast enough. And I can say at 54, I have never sped. Now it's like, can I do 75? Is that legal? Like 77, 70, is 80 okay? What's the maximum I can go without getting pulled over? We adapt. Our appetites, they just grow and grow and grow. This is the problem. So Solomon now makes some application. And it's very interesting. First, he says this. We got to be honest about work. Verse 24. There is nothing better. He's going to use this little phrase all the time. There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. We got to be honest. Work is a painful joy. That's what it is. So this example, I think, works no matter what you do, no matter what job you have. Here's the painful joy of it, just the, Like, I think the best system would be that you marry young, you have kids, you pour into your kids until you're like 45, and you start your career at 45, and you work until you die. Like, there's no retirement. Retirement is death. Like, everywhere has a mortuary. Like, Walmart has a mortuary. What happened to the guy? He retired. He's in the mortuary now. Like, that's just the way it works. Because every parent has faced this dilemma with your kids. That your kids want you to stay and to train them and to play with them and love on them and instruct them, but we can't because we got to give our life to 40 hours or 50 hours or 60 hours to something. And they're holding onto our leg like, Dad, please take me fishing today. I can't. I've got to work. I can't do that. So we have this tension. And maybe the best use of my time would be to invest in my child. Because family, to me, is one of the few echoes of Eden that still lasts to this day. One man, one woman, be fruitful and multiply. Raise up good Yahweh-fearing kids. That's one of the few echoes of Eden that's left in life. And yet, work, we can't do that. So there's this painfulness to it. And see, we got to realize something about work. If you're young, you're working hard because you got some goals. And that's good. You want to buy a house. That's good. So you work hard. That's good. You save and you sacrifice. That's good. Nothing wrong with any of those things. And you find that buy the house. Know this about the house. That house will not be perfect. It will have problems. There'll be a rat that gets into your house. There'll be rot that happens in your house. There'll be leaks that happen in your house. There'll be things that break in your house. You'll find other houses that you like better. Remember that about that house and know this about that house. That house cannot parent your kids. You can parent your kids anywhere. That house cannot show you the way to the abundant life. You've always got to put things in their right bundle. You got to put them in the right place. What happens is we elevate too quickly things. The house will be, no, it won't. It's just a house. It will not parent my kids. It will not show me the way to the abundant life. So I'm going to say something and you got to tuck it away because Solomon's going to come back to this same idea in all kinds of different examples. He's going to circle back on these things over and over and over again to help us understand something. So I'm going to say something. It's this. There are limits to what work can give you, so limit what you give to work. There are limits to what work can give you, so limit what you can give to work. That is another echo in the Garden of Eden. What does God say to do there? Work 6 days and take a day off. Why? Because there are limits to what work can give you. So limit what you give to work. Rest. Take a Sabbath. It is a weekly remembrance that all of us are supposed to have that work is limited. Don't give yourself to this thing. It's a great servant, but it is a terrible master. You have to serve something greater, which is point number two. Verse 25. For apart from him, he's got these little just golden nuggets. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? Man, that's an underliner. You can sit and think about that. For to the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner, he has given the business of gathering and collecting only to give to the one who pleases God. This also is vanity. And a striving after the wind. I say you gotta recalibrate or you wreck. Anybody hear of the Mars Climate Orbiter? Probably not, because it was a disaster. $1,999, $125 million. It did not orbit Mars, and it did not tell us anything about the climate. Here's why. Lockheed Martin designed it, the creator of it, created it using English, inches and pounds. NASA, when they're steering it, used meters and kilograms, the metric system. So guess what happened to the Mars Orbiter climate satellite? It wrecked. Because the creator and the director had different units. We have a creator that dialed us in, and you can argue against those dials all you want. Doesn't matter. It's the way you're designed. And then we have all these inputs that are trying to tell us, hey, do it this way, do it that way. And if we're not careful, look out. So life is always about, I want to get myself recalibrated to the way that God has created me. Not the world, not the pressure, not all this other. I got to keep on saying, no, I want God's units, not the world's units. I serve Jesus Christ, not Caesar. So Solomon says, man, there's a way, gift from God, there's a way that you can live that gives you knowledge. You can work that gives you knowledge. The what's of life. Wisdom, what to do in life. And joy, genuine pleasure in life. There's a way to do life that you can enjoy all those things. Well, anybody want those three? Knowledge, wisdom, joy? I do. Well, how do we do it? We have a great advantage over Solomon because we have the words of King Jesus. And Jesus actually gives you and me a warning about work. He says this, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world? Tom Brady, Elon Musk, you name it. Guys that got to the top. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world but loses his soul? And Jesus, in that little text, a warning on work, gives us the right way to live. So if you have your Bible, turn with me to Mark chapter 8, where Jesus actually makes that little statement. And let me read it for you, and then we'll talk. Mark 8:34. If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and to forfeit his soul? I think every workaholic should have verse 36 printed on their truck or printed on their computer or tattooed on their hand. What does it profit me if I gain this whole world but lose my soul? So I have an acronym for this. I call it, this is the deal. This is the deal, D-E-A-L. Number one, D, deny yourself. That's how Jesus begins, deny yourself. We have a culture now that says everyone has to act authentically. That is not the Bible. The Bible does not tell you and me to act authentically. There are times that I am driving on 6th Street that I want to authentically hurt other drivers. I am not to act on those feelings. The Bible says over and over, no, you don't do that. You deny yourself. The Bible is not you're okay, I'm okay. The Bible is you are broken and you require the healer, Jesus Christ, to repair you. You need scripture and community and communion and heart surgery. So deny yourself. Deny yourself. And what's amazing is the American Psychiatric Association, the APA, agrees. I've got this great article from them. They said that acting authentically does not make you happy. They said what actually makes a person happy is acting upon the deepest convictions of your heart. Because acting authentically is all over the place, depending on what I ate today, depending on what I listened to today. No, it's acting on the deepest conviction of your heart. That's what actually brings happiness. Here is my deepest conviction. Jesus is the perfect king. I am not, so I deny myself. Deny. E, embrace. Embrace my cross. Take up your cross. Guess what that is? It's not a cross forced upon me. It's I am willingly saying, I will pick up my cross. I will embrace it. I'll embrace difficulty and pain and toil. That's what I'll do. Satan will never tempt you with difficulty and pain and toil. He's always gonna tempt you with, take the easy way out. Take the comfortable way. And when I do, I miss out. There's this great book written decades ago called Cradles of Eminence. Two researchers looked at the lives of 300 of the most influential people in the world. Your Clara Bartons, your FDRs, your Churchills, your Einsteins, your Gandhis. Like, what was the cradle that led to such greatness in their life? And what they found was, it was difficulty. 3/4 of them grew up in total poverty. The majority of them had really bad parents. Not Warden June Cleaver, no, Alan Peggy Bundy. That's the kind of crazy parents they had. 25% of them had physical handicap of some sort. I just go on and on and on. What they found was, it was the pain and the difficulty that put greatness into them. And when I run from that, I miss it. It's what Jeremiah is told. Jeremiah goes through a real hard time from chapter 9. You can read it from chapter 9 to chapter 23. He's beaten up. He's thrown in prison. He's like brutal, kidnapped, taken to Egypt, like bad. And he's wondering why this is happening to him. And God tells him in chapter 12, verse 5, he says, because I want you to run with horses. You ever try to chase down a horse? I own horses for a while. You cannot run with horses. They'll run faster than you, farther than you, right? Pony Express. It's not called the Human Express. It's called the Pony Express because it's a lot faster. As God is saying, you don't understand, Jeremiah. It's this difficulty that's gonna work into you. Greatness. That's why I tell my kids this. It is tattooed on their brain. Hard's not bad. Hard's not bad. Embrace. Accompany. Follow Jesus. My goal is not my job. My goal is not my reputation. My goal is not how many people fill this sanctuary. My goal is not people tell me how great I am. My goal is not how many followers I have on Instagram. I don't have an account. I don't have any social media. I don't care about any of that stuff. My goal is one thing. I want to be a follower of Jesus Christ, hard period. That's my goal. I was dialed into that. That's what Solomon is getting at back when he's like, without him, you can't enjoy anything. Joy comes from knowing Jesus. Life is to know the Son and to know the Father, John 17. That's the dial. I want him. Work can be a great tool in that, a fantastic tool in that, but it must be recalibrated accordingly. Not my master, it is my servant. And then lose your life. The word there for life, we get the word psyche. Psychiatrist, psychologist. Really, literally, it's your mind. It's lose your mind. And I spelled it that way for a reason. Lose your mind. You might be saying, I already did. I have 5 kids. I know that. Gone. The example Jesus gives of what we can lose our mind to is work. For what does it profit a man? If you've given your mind to gaining the entire world and your soul is shriveled and dead. That's the example. But you can give 1,000 examples of things that we put into the wrong spot there. We're endlessly doing it. We give ourselves to it because we believe, man, if I could just get 7 Super Bowl rings, then I'd be happy. And Tom Brady would say, I wish I knew. I wish I knew. If I just had more money, I'd be happy. Does money make you happy? You know any rich people that are not happy? We're gonna lose our mind. We have to look at life through a different lens. Jesus says it's the lens of my sake and the gospel. That's the right dials. It's I'm not living for me, I'm living for Jesus and the gospel. That's where life abundantly comes from. That I deny myself, take up my cross, embrace whatever's coming to me, and I say, I'm a follower of Jesus. That works in your marriage. If marriage is about me and my needs, I will ruin it. If marriage is about me denying myself, taking up my cross willingly, willingly saying whatever hardship or difficulty comes, no problem because I'm a follower of Jesus Christ and it's not about me, it's about my spouse. You'll have a brilliant marriage. If parenting, if I deny myself, take up my cross because it will be painful and toilsome and difficult to raise kids. But I say, it doesn't matter. Because it's not about me, it's about being a follower of Jesus, and you're gonna use these things. If work is painful and vexing and sorrowful, what I say is good. This is a tool to help me be like Jesus. So right now I'm embracing difficulty and toil and pain, trusting Jeremiah 12:5, trusting Romans chapter 5, trusting James chapter 1. Count it all joy. We have toil and vexation and difficulty because it's through those things that patience is being perfected. Okay? I'm trusting. That's it. So I work heartily as unto him. All right, Jesus, use the tool right now of work in my life to make me a better follower of you. Let me work heartily at this thing, but it will not own me. I will Sabbath well as well because there's limits to what work can give to me, so I will limit what I give to work. That's the right perspective. That's a recalibration. And just to not be confused on what Jesus is saying here, because people take it out of context and they make it weird. Jesus is not saying this. Deny yourself, take up your cross, follow me, and be miserable. Be a monk, be an ascetic, be a stoicist. Just be miserable. He's not saying that. No, he said, you're going to find life. Jesus is not saying, I'm gonna suffer and die, so Matt, you never have to suffer. It's not escapism. He doesn't say that. Jesus is saying, I am gonna suffer, and Matt, I am gonna die, so that when you suffer, you'll be like me. That's what Jesus is saying. And that's the greatest joy anyone will ever find, becoming more and more like Jesus. And so work is hard. I say, no problem, that's a tool in the hand of my Savior, my shepherd, to make me more like him. And when you get this simple thing, guess what happens to you? What happens to you, and what can happen to all of us, is this. We get recalibrated, and we become unwreckable. You can't be wrecked anymore. You're bulletproof. No matter what the world, no matter what pain, hardship, vexation, sorrow comes to you, you're unwreckable. Just a tool to make me like Jesus. That's why we take communion every Sunday. Make us like you, Jesus.